Welcome to the Assist Podcast, a show where two people set out on a journey through mental health, athletics, personal growth, falling down, getting back up, and moving forward, even when it's hard. This is a space for real conversations about what's happening in our lives, in the world around us, and why we as humans do the things we do. We believe we're all wired for a connection, love, and the freedom to share our stories without judgment or shame. Here we speak up. We say what needs to be said. We try to be brave and let the words come out, hoping they help you feel a little more seen, heard, and supported along your own path. Our guests join us to share their truths, offer their wisdom, and walk beside us as we all learn and grow together. Let's start the journey now. Hello and welcome to the Assist Podcast. Our key focus is mental health and sports. We know that we all need an assist in life. I'm Scott Brennan and I'm here with Charlie Wills. Our guest today is Jen Sluga. Jen is a therapist, trainer, and consultant specializing in complex trauma. Jen has worked with survivors of trauma, helping them heal through therapy and support. She's extensively trained in EMDR therapy, a well-researched brain-based therapy for healing trauma. She's devoted to helping people to resolve old, unhealthy patterns of thinking and behaving that prevent them from reaching their full potential. Jen draws her own experiences, her military service and deployment, her work as a former Veterans Service Officer and Veterans Trauma Psychotherapist. Welcome, Jen. I'm wondering if you could get a little bit of a background on what drew you towards being a therapist.
Oh, dear Lord. I think that's a lifelong answer to that question. I think it's interesting. I started out college thinking I was going to do international business and wanted to travel the world. And I feel like the world brought me to this role, is that every single experience I started having just kept leading me to this direction. And I kept finding that I became a person in which people felt safe and comfortable and vulnerable enough, in which people just always came to me and wanted advice or support or wisdom. And it was just something that felt really comfortable and felt very natural to me. So here it is. I try to really speak to people authentically, openly, honestly, in a vulnerable way where there's nothing that I'm not comfortable talking about. I know that the reason why I'm here today is you had talked to a couple other therapists and they were like, and you asked them, is this something that you feel comfortable with? And they were like, Oh, no, nope, not at all.
Right.
And I was telling him that on my way here, I called a couple of my former coworkers and other therapists. I'm like, I'm about to do a podcast about gender roles. Like, they're like, what are you doing? That is career suicide. I'm like, it's good conversation. We need to be having these conversations that are hard. So
yeah,
I think that that's the role I've taken on.
I think it's great too. And you and I had a phone call a couple of weeks back, and some of the things we talked about were super helpful for me. And there was some very direct conversations and we were laughing and I was picturing your face smiling on the other side. You and I have not met before. This is the first time. And I mean, it was great. We talked for like 30 minutes and we covered so much stuff. And I was like, yes, this is a good fit.
Yeah.
You have been selected wisely by your friends. Was it Laura who So Laura who had that conversation. So like, I think so about the general stuff, like historically men were expected to be providers and protectors. And while women were caretakers and nurturers, am I correct in asking and saying that that's no longer true and that's kind of where we could start as our conversation here?
Absolutely.
Okay, great. Do you want to... What
was the uptick on that question?
Well, because I was just... I wanted to make sure I was asking it correctly and...
He's even approaching this very hesitantly.
That was very
Is this okay? Where do we start?
Yes. We'll start that way very, very softly. So you want to take the lead on that and kind of...
Well, there's a part of me that wants to ask, like, why is this such, you know, such a scary, such a... soft startup of why do we need to be so hesitant of this? Why do we need to be so careful? And I think recognizing that, you know, I'm going to probably talk out of both sides of my mouth today, and I am readily able to do that. And I think that unfortunately this conversation has ended up a lot like politics, where we're very divided. There's people on both ends of the spectrum, and there's some individuals that are in the middle and able and wanting to learn more, gain more perspective, gain more understanding. And there are some individuals that are on the opposite ends of the spectrum, in which we're not going to change their minds, or we're not here to change any minds. Yeah. We're just here to offer up information and learning. But because this is such a hot topic, people don't want to touch it. They're afraid they might get burned.
Yeah. I'm in that curious space where I think I've talked to people on both sides. So for me, I feel like I have some knowledge, but I don't have enough to be able to speak on one side or the other. And it sounds like it might be both ways, and neither way is right, but we have to have the conversations, and especially when we're in relationships, and you shared a story with me too, just being in a relationship with someone who you don't really know where you fit in. Like, am I supposed to show up and be this strong man or soft? And like, how are you, you know, especially being divorced and putting two households together, and that person may have to wear both hats, whereas I have not had to wear that caretaker hat, even though I have a son. So to me, I just naturally move into the zone as being one thing and not knowing and confused unless someone specifically gives me directions and says, I want you to be this in this relationship.
Right. Well, and so bringing up divorce, thinking I grew up in a divorced household with a single mom. My dad was outside of the home. And I think that many of the individuals that are of our generation experienced divorce households. And so there wasn't always two people in the household. We didn't see what a typical male role model looked like, what a typical female role model looked like. And that started a lot more of the breakdown of what are the roles? Where does a man fit in? Where does a woman fit in? And I think that with a lot more of the divorces happening in the 80s and the 90s is that we started seeing that women started doing more, taking on more roles. And kids started, they know what a mom looks like because typically it is a woman or a mom who is more active in the household and more active with the kids. So the kids can see, oh, I know what that looks like, but they don't know what a man looks like. They don't know what that husband relationship looks like, what that dynamic and role should be and should have expectations on that person.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm probably on the far biblical side of this, right, mm-hmm. of roles. I believe women are naturally made to be nurturers, caretakers. I think you're specifically designed for that. And, I think it gets conflated on the word helper because that's been moved from Hebrew to Greek to English. And it's totally wrong, right? Helper isn't what he defined. God did not define a woman as a helper. He actually gave him the same level as Jesus Christ. Helper was the word he used for Jesus Christ. So, like, I think women need to understand their impact. Like, they have a greater impact on everything inside of a family, inside of a relationship, more than, you know, what's used in society as helper, right? Mm-hmm. So that's where I come from. I do believe, like what you said, and also you, Jen, about, like, there's a crappy definition. I think too many people sit in the middle and are unwilling to make a commitment. That's the reason we have so much confusion. Mm-hmm. Whatever your decision is, I don't care. Mm-hmm. But, like, I see a lot of balance, and I just am finishing up both books that I wanted to read for a long time because we came from a divorced, broken home. Mm-hmm. And so what does it really look like to have a great mom? What does it really look like to be a great dad? And so I'm reading, I just finished up Strong Fathers, Strong Daughters, because it's like how important, written by a woman, by the way, how important it is for a man's role, a father's role in a daughter's life. And at what levels, right? And then same for your sons. The thing that caught me when I read the one about the daughters is your relationship with your daughter and what you give for her for everything that she needs. So every image about how you relate to your wife, how you speak to everybody in the house, how you are available, that's her husband. Mm-hmm. You're literally the image of the husband. And it was and it says it several times in the book. So, like, for me, like, it was a great reminder. Like, again, I was already in that camp.
Yeah.
And I'm reading a book. I don't know this author, right? And then they're saying, like, yeah, this is, like, the healthy psychotherapy way to, like, have these roles. And so I'm just curious from you having that background. I was curious after reading your bio of, like, what does that look like? What do you... Again, maybe your opinion, maybe what you practice.
Absolutely. I love this because I totally agree with everything that you just cited. And I also believe I had an experience where I was sitting with our son a couple years ago, and I remember him coming up to me, and he was probably around the age of like 4 or 5. And he's like, Mom, when I grow up, I want to be a mom. And I was like, what? I said, what? No, when you grow up, you get the choice if you want to be a dad. And he's like, no, I want to be a mom. And the conversation didn't stop there. And I think this is where we can get stuck as people, to be like, oh, you want to be a woman, you want to be this. Like, we can get caught up in all the messy and all the gray. But I took it further with him. As I said, why would you want to be a mom when you grow up? What do you think is so special about being a mom? And he goes, well, I think it's really awesome that you take care of all of us, that you feed all of us, that, and then he ended it with saying, and you're the boss. You make all the decisions. And I was like, oh crap. Because as a woman, there is a part of me that coming up in a single mother household where my mom did have to do everything. I have taken on a lot of those same types of behaviors of taking on all of the roles, all of the things in my household. And then, and sometimes it has led to resentment in my relationship of, why are you not doing more? Why are you not stepping in? And we'll get to that, I know, today.
Yes.
But, no. But recognizing, like,
we will touch that.
My son was seeing, he gets to see all the ways in which I'm incredible because I'm highlighting it. He sees it. But I wasn't leaving room in the relationship for my husband to show up and show how incredible he was. I wasn't valuing what he brings to the relationship. And so in that conversation with my son, I got to point out all the things that dad does, but it was also a huge check for me of like, step back. You need to allow your husband to step in and be a man and be a dad. Step into that role more. And so there are times where my husband and I don't parent the same. We have two different parenting styles, right? That is actually very healthy.
Super good.
And good for our kids. I am always going to probably come at things from a more nurturing, soft side of like love and compassion. Let me teach you. Let me help you understand why this is okay. I sometimes need my husband to come in with the hammer. But then I can't get mad when he comes in with the hammer when I need him to come in with the hammer. And I think that we women sometimes put men in a double bind of like, you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. And so that one conversation with my son really allowed me to see where I was contributing to the fact that he wanted to be me versus trying to highlight how he could be like my husband and trying to really show, look at all the ways that dad is showing up. And then also making sure to have the conversation with my husband of like, you better start showing up for this little boy because he needs to know what this looks like of how to show up as a husband, as a dad. And just like you're describing is, you know, they're looking at us of, how do I live this life each and every day? How are the choices I make, the behaviors I use, how does this look like? And our kids are going to mirror us.
And so in your scenario, you've got someone in close proximity that you had kids, you're married. So, mm-hmm. So you had that connection before you had kids, which I think is extremely important, right?
Yes.
To have those critical conversations. You had kids together. You're going through different phases where you're working through their ages and your careers and whatnot. How do you do it when it's Scott dating whomever, you got two or three kids, I come into the household, those kids are like, what in the hell is going on? Mom usually runs the show. Mm-hmm. Where does Scott fit in? And if that person doesn't have a conversation with those kids,
yeah,
what happens?
I want to answer this from a non-direct way. Right? It's not going to work. That doesn't work because everything, even with it being easier with being in a relationship and with my, in which my husband and I had the same kids together and we're supposed to be on the same page, we're still on different pages all the time. And you coming in and like imposing, so much of what we know about mental health is that if somebody is doing something and it's working, they're not going to change it. But what we're missing out is that just because it's working doesn't mean it's functional, doesn't mean it's actually working. But trying to change a dynamic and trying to get a person to do something that's unfamiliar is actually really scary because their nervous system is going to go, wait a minute, we don't know if we're going to survive that. We don't know if that's actually going to be okay. So what you're asking is you're trying to get an entire family dynamic, an entire different family unit to say, hey, I'm not a threat. I'm not here to hurt you. I'm here to collaborate and to contribute to your household. But they have to be willing to receive that. And so often in relationships, the other person is not willing to receive. Because this gets into one of the conversations that we had is that so often women come into my office and they will, I don't like to use the word complain, but they will vent and discuss how much their significant other is not showing up in their relationship. But yet when I really challenge them of how are they allowing that other person to show up in the relationship, they don't, because, well, I wish he would help out around the house. And I go, okay, so what are some chores or what are some things that he could contribute in? And, you know, maybe it's loading the dishwasher. No, he doesn't do that correct. He doesn't even know how to, the plates go in there, and then I have to reorganize anyways. Okay, could he do the laundry? No, I can't trust him with that.
So you've blocked him.
You've
not given him an avenue.
Absolutely not. So you say you want this person in your life. You're trying to keep this person in your life, but you are actively not allowing them in whatsoever. So how is that person supposed to contribute? You are going, that relationship will either be filled with resentment and anger and sadness, or it will fail.
And all of it.
All and of all. The above.
So taking just a step back, what is the proper procedure? Is it like we all sit down, the four of us, when we have a conversation and the kids hear from, hey, as me, this is what Scott looks like, this is what I look like, things are going to change, we want to meet, you know, I don't know, do you have weekly dinners where you just talk about it, and eventually after 4, 5, 6 months, everybody gets to say their piece, and you create some sort of safe space where the kids can say, ah, you know, Scott, when you do this, it makes me feel that way, and then I go, oh my gosh, I don't even understand that, that's great, like, I'm used to doing that, this is how I functioned in my last marriage, and like, what would you like from me? Like, what do you want me to do? Do you want me to clap at your basketball games? Do you want me to give you a hug? Mm-hmm. Is it okay if I give you a note? When can I tell you I love you?
Right.
Even though I'm not your father? And then even helpful for me of thinking, is it appropriate for me to be able to tell someone else's daughter or son I love you and give them a hug? And how long do I have to wait before I say that?
Right. It's a lot of questions.
I know.
Which of the 43 do you want me to answer?
How about if you could give me a cheat sheet in a book, and I'm sitting here, and you just go, Scott, these are the three steps I would do. And then that will open the door for the rest.
So what I hear you saying is that right now you are caught in between a rock and a hard place of you want so badly to be loved and be included in this dynamic and in this relationship, but you're not taking into consideration that first and foremost, they have to want to accept you, receive you, and allow you in. And that means, you know, when I talk about, everybody knows about the love languages. I think that that's an interesting place to start for people. And I think it's an easy conversation, but I also really challenge people of when you're doing the five love languages, not only figuring out how you like to give love, how you like to receive love. Because I know I have two different love languages of, I like to give gifts to people. I like to pay for things for people. I hate receiving gifts. That's an interesting thing to know about me. I also need to know what are my partner's love languages and where, like, how they can receive, how they cannot. And also knowing that throughout your relationship with another person, that love language is going to completely change. When my husband and I first took it, when we first started dating, I was in grad school, and I remember we had almost the same exact score. And physical touch was like at a 1 or 2 for both of us. Like, wasn't even a consideration. We're like, yep, not important for us. And it wasn't until we took it about 2 years ago, where now we have a 6-year-old and an 8-year-old, and you know our kids are starting to get older, in which we retook it, and his physical touch, his score was the highest score, and mine was still low, exactly where it was before. And what I realized is it had shifted for him, because this whole journey through having kids and having these things is, I was still getting physical touch this entire time. I was getting comfort and love from the kids. He was not. So his need now just went through the roof because he wasn't getting it. And so he was in like, oh my gosh, I wish I had more physical touch. And I'm like, I'm good. I don't need that. But seeing it from him, I was like, wow, it is higher for you. And how can I contribute to that? How can I show up for you and meet that need in a way in which, and for me, it never even registered that that was something that shifted so much for him. And it didn't shift for me. If I don't have two kids on me, I have a dog on me. If I don't have a dog on me, then I have
him. Like, enough touch, touch,
enough
touch.
I'm being oversight. I'm good.
Yeah.
I'm good.
I have something to, like, interject.
Yeah.
I feel like a lot of, again, just what I see. I don't have a study. Double blind, you know. But I hear this a lot. Like, I'm overstimulated. Don't touch me. And then the guy's like, well, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They desire to hang out with you tonight, and usually through physical, it doesn't have to be always a sexual touch, but it's just like, they just want to be near you, right? Like, you're their person, right? Like, they signed up forever for that one person, and if that one person always denies them, even just the basic, here's where I'm going with this line in the plane, is that a majority of this conversation, when I've had it with my own wife, or I've heard it from other guys, women are focusing on the children, not on their marriage.
Correct.
And it's toxic.
Right.
It's super toxic to your marriage. Your marriage is number one.
Mm-hmm.
That's important. And also your children will benefit because they're going to see a super powerful, that's what marriage looks like, yeah. Like example.
Right.
And they know they got to wait versus mm-hmm. like mommy, 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 cling, cling, cling. Right. I'll literally be sitting next to my daughter and this, they're 9 and 6. Like, hey mom, she's 2 rooms over. I am right here. Can you get, and then I'll do this. And then, you know, I'm leaning in right now so everybody knows what I'm doing. I'll lean in front of her.
Yeah.
And she'll be like, oh, hi, Dad. Yeah, I've been sitting here the whole time.
Yeah.
She's like, I know you can help me too, right? And I'm like, yeah, I can.
Mm-hmm.
So it's one of these things that you have to reprogram because, again, mom was there, was present. We chose, I want to make sure my wife was, like, she wanted that. She wanted to be home. So it was like, okay, how do we do this financially? Mm-hmm. But also, like, what are the boundaries? What are we setting up? But it was really hard because, like, yeah, I get home and she's just like, I'm out. Like, I'm so physically checked out. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm mentally checked out. And then you're coming home thinking, like, I get to see my family. Like,
right.
One question my wife, when we were talking about this, and I think this is it's ever evolving, right? Like yeah. you said, it was different when you met versus now you have kids at this age and it's going to be different when they're teenagers.
Totally.
She asked me this important question probably 4 or 5 years ago. I don't know exactly when, but she said, how do you want to be received when you come home?
And I was now you're like, lucky.
I was like, God, you care, like, you want to know, like,
right.
I'm like, this is the dumbest answer, but it's the only way I know how to explain it. I said, I want my children to run and scream my name and give me a hug, and then I want you to give me a hug, and, like, that's how I want to be, like, received.
And what I want to point out for you is the two things you just said is A, the emotion that came up when you just said that is you just want to be valued. You want to feel like my presence matters in this household and I'm loved. And the thing before that you said is this is dumb. And that is the problem with a lot of males is that they're not encouraged to share their vulnerabilities of what they need and what and how they want to be received, how they want people to show up for them. Is because as a provider, as a protector, it's like, how do I show up for everybody else? But, and you guys are supposed to be strong and supposed to be all these things, but like, you have needs too. And a lot of the times, men don't really know what needs they want or how to fill those needs. And so, and it does feel uncomfortable to be vulnerable to say, this is what would make me feel special. This is what would make me feel really important and valued in this household. And even as you were leaning in front of your daughter, it's the, do you see me? I add value here. Notice me. I can help you too. And, you know, I will say it's interesting is when I come home, I actually have a strict rule of like, because of the, oh my gosh, I'm touched out. I'm energetically exhausted and burnt out. Is my husband and I made a really kind of like a set routine is when I get home, my routine is I acknowledge everybody. Hey guys, how are you doing? Like, but I go straight into our bedroom and we have this walk-in closet. And I take my time getting, you know, into my comfy clothes. It's the taking off the bra, getting mm-hmm. into this nice comfort clothes. Mm-hmm. And once I feel like my nervous system is like shifted, I'm like now in mom mode, wife mode versus just being in like work mode where my brain is racing. I turn it all off. I give myself a couple moments so that when I reintroduce myself to the household, I am able to be present. I am mm-hmm. able to be in the position. And sometimes you have to be able to identify, like, what do I need in order to be the best version of myself in this situation? And for me, I need to be able to change gears and I need this space to do it. And so before my husband would receive me, as you said, it's like he'd come up and open arms and like, I want to squeeze you and touch you and kiss you. And I'm like, in that moment, I want nothing more than to push you away and be like, get off of me. And so I just need to like readjust. Breathe. And then yeah. once I'm ready to receive, I'm all there.
Mm-hmm.
I had similar, and I will say, sharing that with the person that I was in a relationship with, that person got really upset with me because I said, I need 10 minutes. I come home, I work a high stressful job. If you can just give me 10. They wanted to just give me a hug and dive into it. As much as that would have been great, it wouldn't have been a genuine hug I would give back. It'd be kind of one of right. these things. Like I'm a leaner, right?
Yeah.
But after those 10 minutes, once I just, same thing. But I didn't go change clothes, but I really liked that. If you could just go to a different room and like, it's like the Mr. Rogers effect of I'm yeah. getting out of my business and I'm going into my comfort, right?
Yeah.
I like that. I think that's important. But just that person got really mad at me and said, you're just not, I need this from you. And it was like, well, how can we negotiate? Like,
right.
I'm asking for 10 minutes. I'm not asking for an entire day. So
right.
You're the first person who's I've heard, and especially coming from a woman saying, I need those 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, and I think relationships, when we talk about, and it doesn't matter what gender it is, but when we talk about relationships, you have to be willing to compromise. You have to be willing to recognize, like, this is not just all about my needs. Sometimes the needs of the other person has to come first, and they have to be a priority over mine. And it can't be all the time, but when people talk about or expect relationships to be 50-50, like, that happens sometimes, but sometimes the relationship is going to look 90-10. Sometimes the relationship is going to look 60-40, and it's being willing to communicate that to the other person. And so, like, this week, I had this going on. I had four other major events and projects all closing this week. I have been communicating to my husband for the last 3 weeks, hey, this week coming up is going to be a week for me. I'm giving you a heads up. I'm going to be less available. I'm going to need a lot more buy-in and a lot more support that week. I'm going to need you helping with these things, kind of marking them down and putting them on his radar. And then it allows for him to show up for me.
Yeah. And you're able to ask for help and communicate that during these times, I might not be fully present. And so you're seeing it through a lens of, that's okay, this is great. There are a lot of people who just, to them, they're like, well, I'm this strong person. What if I can admit, if I have to admit that I can't function this week, right, now it's a chink in the armor. And then that's the beginning of a doorway of, maybe I'm not so perfect. Maybe I'm not so strong. Maybe I'm not the best, whatever.
Yeah.
Can you talk about why people get stuck on that?
Yes, absolutely. Because that used to be me.
Okay.
And there was a time, and I will share this story, is there was a time in which I was, my old defense mechanism used to be like, my mom actually always shares a story. She's like, since the time you were 2 or 3 years old, you would put your hands on your hips and you'd go, I do it myself. And she goes, you never allowed anyone to help you. And I can reflect that as a child, I didn't trust my mom's wisdom. I didn't trust her guidance because, right, she married my dad, who was an alcoholic, who did all these bad things. Like, she made a lot of choices that I didn't respect even as a little kid. So when she made parenting decisions, I still didn't respect them. So from the time in which I was little, I was raising myself and making decisions that I felt were going to keep me safe. And so then when I got into a relationship, it's being forced to then re-identify and go, can I trust this person to make decisions? Can I trust this person to take care of me, to help me, to do all those things? And I remember a time in which I was getting angry and upset and I was bristling and I was just like, so irritated. And my husband came at me and he wanted to comfort me and he wanted to hug me, and every core piece of my body wanted to, like, throat punch him. And I was so angry because I never would want to allow somebody else to be there for me and to comfort me. And I remember him just, like, doing one of those, like, big bear hugs where he just, like, wrapped his arms around me, and I could feel every part of my nervous system and body, like, wanting to fight back, and my arms were like pinned down from my side. And right, and as being somebody who has experienced trauma and sexual trauma, I was getting triggered. I was upset, and my nervous system was like, oh my gosh, kill him, get him off of you. And I, like, forced myself to just take a couple deep breaths because he's like, I am here. I got you. Allow me to hold you and just have you. And he was talking to me, and I'm like, why am I having a fear-based response from my husband who is trying to show up to me? And it took me a couple, like 3 to 6, like, really good deep breaths. And all of a sudden, my entire nervous system, it was like I shattered something that had been in my soul for my entire life.
Wow.
As I collapsed, and I was like, holy crap, like, this is what I've needed for the last, what, 30 something years, was just to allow somebody else to be there for me. And it's like my whole body turned to butter and I melted and I totally just, like, got soft and squishy, and I cried and I got emotional, and he supported me through that. And now, and you know, he would probably laugh and also turn 10 shades of red for me sharing this, but in our household, it has turned into, like, we call it squishy time. We're like, there are times where if he is anxious about anything or he has a stressful something, he's like, can we have, like, 5 minutes of squishy time? And I'm like, yes, absolutely. Or, like, I'll ask that of him. And we'll actually, like, we'll go in the bedroom or we'll do it on the couch in front of the kids. We don't care where it's at. But, like, we will lay down and the other person will lay on the other person.
Wow.
And we just lay there. And there have been times where, like, we'll do that for 5 to 6 minutes. And we have fallen asleep in that, like, short little time because our nervous systems are co-regulating and taking each other and going, I'm safe. I'm comfortable. But, you know, calling me out on my own stuff, it took me knocking off what I was doing for all those years that wasn't working it took me getting soft. It took me being vulnerable to allow that in. And so when you ask, like, what do I do in this relationship with this woman who has kids, and how can I show up for them? If they're not willing to receive it, if they're not willing to get past their own past traumas of being hurt, of being used, of being, if they're not willing to let you in, you're not going to get in.
Yeah. Kudos to your husband, by the way.
Yeah.
That takes a lot of patience, especially if somebody's bucking hard like that for a long period of time. Like, for me, I'm like, you know what? I've had enough bucking. Like, I would just confront somebody and say, how does this stop?
Yeah.
And probably not the best way to do it, but I think he kept going clearly, and at one point you cracked.
Yeah.
But I'm sure there were plenty of times when he tried to squeeze you and you were just like, get off of me.
Oh, there were times when we were building our second home together. It was during 2020, so right, pandemic. We sold our house, and here we are living in an apartment with two young kids. We had one in a crib next to our bed. We were in a small little tiny apartment because it was all they had. Building a house, which that in itself is stressful. Yeah. Then the pandemic, then all the things. Oh my gosh, it was all the things. And I remember a point in our relationship where one of our biggest coping strategies is laughter and going to comedy shows. And right, comedy shows were shut down, so we couldn't even do that. Yeah. And I remember turning on a comedian who is our favorite and listening to this show. And there was a time where all of a sudden there was a joke made. He is laughing and responding. And I remember looking at him being like, I hate you so much that I don't even want you to experience pleasure of laughter. Oh my God. And I remember just giving him a look, and he's like, come on, that was funny. And I'm like, no, you're not allowed to experience. Like, we had gotten to a level in our relationship where I didn't think we were going to make it. I didn't think we're. And so, yes, to attest to, like, he showed up. He kept showing up. And, you know, it takes two people to show up in a relationship. And, you know, it's, relationships are not easy. They are really hard. Mm-hmm. But it takes two people doing not just work together, but their own work of, like, where am I failing?
That's the key thing. Like, I think, you know, when you get approached to say, hey, would you like to go to couples therapy? And that person's not in therapy. Mm-hmm. And maybe you're in therapy. And that feeling of, gosh, like, we're going to go in here and we're going to spin tires because I'm ready to roll. Mm-hmm. Like, Jen's going to ask me a question and I'm just going to speak it out. And then that person will not be able to respond as fast.
Right.
They'll eventually just go, oh my gosh. Then the shell comes out and they're like, oh yeah, couples therapy didn't work. And it's like, you got to do your own journey to get to a certain point so we're at least close where we're,
right.
You know, if I'm in therapy for 6 years and you're in 2 months, I'm going to talk a lot of really good language that you're going to get spun around. And then when we go to couples therapy, it's a tough thing. Now, if you're both starting it, so, like, yeah, I think it's where you're at. And if you're not prepared to have that conversation, couples therapy just won't help you.
Right.
Because you're just paying somebody to talk about the things that you can't talk about on the couch.
Right.
Yeah. I think I notice a lot. Again, just, I shouldn't say a lot, but a thing I notice is, especially with kids, as you are growing, you know, there's a lot of life, right? Like, mm-hmm. The mornings are busy, the day's busy, the night's busy. Like, you never get, like, this moment to be a couple, and you feel like you have to get away on a vacation, or it's right. Just like,
yeah.
Oh, I like you. Yeah, we like hanging out.
Yeah.
I feel like there's a lot of resentment
mm-hmm.
that comes along with marriage, not necessarily always from the woman's side, but I do see it a ton. Like you said, it's like, well, that's not done right. That's not done right. That's right. And guys are like, I'm out. I'm gonna go in the yard. You can't tell me what to do in the yard, at least.
Well, right? they're yeah, no, it does not, Charlie. Some people really care about the yards, and it is a shiny piece of that. It's a symbol of them being successful. The way their yard looks, honestly. So
you
might encounter that at some point.
Who knows. But
you're like, just not there yet.
That's your trauma. Yeah. Leave it.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, do I need to check on my trauma at the door?
We'll get back to you.
Okay, fine.
Yeah, no,
we'll work on Charlie's.
I'm wondering, like, no, this isn't just my own. I've heard it from other guys. I'm grateful that I've got a group of men that, you know, we all talk to each other about mm-hmm. different stuff, and we try to listen. And it's not always a solving thing, but it's more of a, okay, wow, ooh, that's hard. I don't know what to do with that. But you know, talk, get it out. I feel like that's the biggest part, because I think there's expectations on the men to show up a specific way, and I felt this, like, you're always on, there's not an off.
Mm-hmm.
I've had to learn that I don't get the 10 minutes, because my wife's usually at a breaking point when I get home, right? Usually because the kids are a lot, you know, they're 6 and 9,
right.
They're a lot, but in a good way, but they just are, they're loud
mm-hmm.
and fun, but it's a lot when you're by yourself. So I've learned, and this is something I've talked with some of my friends, is that as a man, I have learned that there has to be in some way to give yourself the 10 minutes. I have to stop blocks away or at a park, and I sit in my car, and I do Wim Hof breathing.
Mm-hmm.
And I do full repetitions of breath holds at the end to meditate and just calm my brain down, right? Like, because I want to be present. I have a guy that, like, he goes and he listens, he drives around until the music hits him and then it changes his mood, right?
Yeah.
I think there's different ways to make that adjustment, but, like, I think this is my experience, you're not allowed to do that as a man. You're expected to just make the transition, move into that thing, because I need you in these ways. And if you're having a hard day, I don't want to hear about it, right?
Right.
And so, like, guys tend to just not talk about it, and that's not good either.
Right.
So, anyways, I think for people that are listening, like, okay, hey, maybe I recognize this in my spouse in some way, male or female, or maybe what are some, if we don't have the 10, maybe your spouse is not up for the 10 minutes of personal time before you get into that. What does that look like, or what conversations should you be having, either with yourself, maybe with somebody else, just to like, all right, hey, I know I need X.
Yeah, I think that being able to identify, do I need this? You know, some people can make that transition really easy. Some people need, okay, I'm going to stop from before I get to home, or I'm going to create that little patch of time where I can take care of myself before I walk into this. Where you kind of started with that is like the resentment of the female in the household of, I have to do everything. I have to take care of all this stuff. And I'm asking you to show up. And so you need to be on and ready when you walk in the door. And how do you walk in the door and not see all the 20 things that need to get done? And I've talked with so many females about this, about, typically there tends to be one person in the relationship that is a lot more detail oriented. That is a lot more like, I can look around the house and see the 17 things that need to be done instantly. And then there typically is a person in the household, which that is not their forte. They cannot instantaneously see all the things that need to happen. Or the fact that your wife may have the 17 things in her head of like, okay, as soon as he gets home, I need to start dinner, because, and then I need to change over the laundry and I need to do this. And it's being able to communicate those things more clearly, because so often, because you're so focused on coming in the door, getting dinner, getting the kids to practice, you're focused on what is the next thing, that you don't stop. And that 30 seconds of communication would change your entire rest of your night if you were to say, hey, I need to get dinner started. I need help with these three things real quick. Can you change over the laundry? Can you help start with this? And can you let out the dog real quick? Because, you know, and so sometimes it's just being able to take 30 seconds to communicate, this is what I need. And then for you to be able to go, I got this. I can step in. Mm-hmm. And where I see the resentment is that so often the person who sees all the stuff doesn't want to have to communicate all the things that they see or all the things that they need. And they get burnt out and they get tired of having to identify it. And so then
people are mind readers.
Right.
Yeah.
And so it's trying to find more tools that way of, you know, I have sat down with my husband and I'm like, I don't like that I have to tell you to do things, because then I feel like I'm acting like your mom, or I feel like I'm being bossy, or that you're gonna call me a bitch. I don't want to be the bitch. I don't want to have to boss you around. And he's like, I don't mind if you make me a list. He goes, I don't mind if you ask for help, but he's like, I can't read your mind. Yeah. So if I come in and you're angry and upset that I'm not helping with these things, he goes, I don't know what you're upset about unless you communicate that to me. And so we have gotten better of, we actually keep like our running, and some people do like a dry erase board right in the kitchen, or they have like, we have a notepad that sits out on our counter and it is right there all the time, where it's like, these are all the tasks that are on my brain that need to get done today. And so then if he comes in, he's like, it takes the pressure off of him too, because he doesn't have to guess what I need help with. He doesn't have to be a mind reader. He just, oh, all right, I'm going to go and start doing my tasks, and we're going to contribute to this household because we're a team.
Mm.
And it's then not a war of who's doing what and who's doing more. It's like, no, we're a team. Whoever gets the next item on the list, do it.
I think also, this is my experience, women get caught from the time they're babies and they start to get old enough. Your kids can do shit.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. And they need to assign your kids.
And your mom, moms are like,
at an early age,
hey, they can make breakfast.
They can clean up their laundry. They can fold it.
Like, I love making breakfast on Saturday. It's a special day. But we have a 6 and 9.
Mm-hmm.
They're not mentally handicapped. They are capable of making breakfast, getting their shoes on, picking their clothes out.
Yeah. Right.
Now it's just set the expectation.
Right.
And then when they cry about it, be like, get your butt upstairs.
Right. But how much of our generation is we are trying to, through our own trauma lens, parent from it. So correct. All of us are trying to make our kids' lives so better.
So simple.
But it's so comfortable that now we have removed any expectation. Yes, we have a lot of laziness. We have a lot of, we're not expecting kids to show up and learn these things. And what we're seeing is that, because this pendulum changed a little bit before our generation.
80s and 2000s.
Yes. And so now we're seeing this group of like 18, I would say 20-year-olds, 5-year minus, 5-year plus, is we're seeing this group, they're not even getting their license. They don't want to get a job. They don't want to drive. They're scared to go out into the world.
And a lot of mental health issues.
Yes.
And we've created it as parents.
Yes.
We have absolutely created it as parents.
Yes. Totally. And it goes back to the same as like, when this could be male or female, but when someone doesn't have agency, you have removed joy and happiness. So whether it's an adult, or if you do it to children, it's the same thing.
Right.
You have to give them agency. You're responsible for these.
Yeah.
Right.
And here's why you're helping.
And you got to do it. And that's not being bad.
And that I beat on it. I know my wife says stuff too. Now that I think it's a constant reminder. Like I'm a forcer of that, but it's harder to get her because she loves to care and do all these things. Right. And I'm like,
but by you're not caring, helping you're them. Enabling. And you're
a difference.
Yeah. Right? There's a total difference. And you need to be able to care by teaching and by showing.
Hold the boundary.
Yes.
Like she hates the, I shouldn't say hate, really dislikes the, she knows we need to do it, but it causes so much drama. She hates it. That
conflict.
It's the conflict piece. Because her house.
Conflict avoidance.
A lot of conflict. I had a lot of conflict, but I'm okay with like keeping it in there.
Yeah.
Like, oh, hey, what was the rule we set? What's our family value about, like, getting your homework done before you go play with your friend? Oh, yeah, I'm supposed to do all my homework. What did you? No. You lost your friends for a week.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, there has to be some consequence.
You know, and, like, you know, all the emotion. And then she'd be like, that's too much. And
I'm
like,
no, it's not.
Hold the line.
Natural consequences. We as a society have removed natural consequences from, and even as adults, like, we don't experience natural consequences as much as we did in the past, and we need to have them. And I remember when my kids were going to daycare, is I actually witnessed another parent dropping off their kids' clothing with their kid and saying they didn't want to get dressed this morning, so if you could get them dressed later in the day. And they're like, we didn't want to get them all upset and have them throw a tantrum. And I'm like, so you just put the responsibility of your kid getting dressed on a daycare provider because you didn't want to deal with the conflict. You're going to put, like,
ridiculous.
We as parents are avoiding so much of showing up and having to deal with the hard stuff. And our kids need to learn, like, nope, there are some things in life that are non-negotiables. There are some things you just do. And yeah, there are some parts of life that are going to suck.
And I think it complicates it too, and this is, of course, these are Scott's experiences and trauma, and we can have a separate podcast for that, but like, you know, when you come from a divorced family, and then, you know, kids are bouncing between households, and if for some reason that father is not emotionally present, or which generally happens in divorce, you know, when that child comes back, it's like the mother just creates this big, huge, puffy landing, and that's where we don't have the consequences, where we don't say, hey, and again, this is my experience, but you don't have to do your laundry. You don't have to fold it. I'm going to do the laundry. I'm going to fold it. That person's 16 years old. Why are you doing their laundry? Why are you folding it? They can't even put their plates in the away or in the sink. And, we'll take care of that, right?
Right.
And so also the other thing I wanted to say, too, about men love direction.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the best thing for me and the person that I would be partnered with is, hey, Scott, here's exactly what I want from you in these following things, in these specific areas. And I go, yep. Awesome. I am ready to roll. I would never be offended.
Yes.
And saying, I want you to tell me. And they're like, no, you know, you got to kind of figure out. No. Specifically, like that list is amazing. I come home and it's like, okay, I got to do those four things. Well, or hey, make dinner. No problem. Love making dinner.
Yeah.
I love doing it for people. I would do it every night. But it's just like, honestly, like, just tell me what to do.
Yeah.
And men are very good. Sometimes we have to sit at the table and go, I need to talk to you, right? You can't just say it when you're flying by out the door.
Right.
And so...
Well, I think another approach, I like the list idea. That's not a
bad
idea.
Yeah, it's great. It's great.
We have implemented, not always the best, of just tell me what you enjoy doing. Like, we know these things have to be done.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you want to take? And you tell me first, because I'm not going to say it, because I'll just do whatever.
Yeah.
Right? I don't give a shit. Just tell me what you're into, and I'll know that you'll do. So just do those. And then I'll take the other part of the list.
Yeah.
And the kids will do some of their own stuff. But, like, if you have a problem with your list or you get behind and you need help, just say
yeah.
it.
Right.
Just
help me.
Right.
Because I'll be like, cool, I got extra time, or I'll make time, or I'll figure it out
yeah.
to help you this week because you ran out of time. Or vice versa. If I crap the bed,
mm-hmm.
I am going to feel terrible about it that I asked my wife to do something extra because she's already doing this stuff at home. But, like, I'm going to probably say, like, hey, I'm not going to be able to get to that till Saturday or Sunday.
Right.
So that I don't get the, oh, when are you going to do it? That eye roll look.
That response should never happen, though. Like, even if you're asking to bear, like, if you're really struggling and someone's super busy, you should be able to say, I need your help, knowing that eventually you're going to get out of that. And then, like you said, it's not 50-50. Some days it's 70-30. Sometimes it's 80-20 for 6 months because someone's having trouble with their job.
Right.
But knowing that, I trust that person's going to get out of it, and it's going to flip. And then when I'm really down, I can just throw all the chips on them, and I'm like, all right, I remember Jen help. Like, we're good.
Well, and so
seasons.
A couple of things about that. Yes, there are seasons of life. And so even something that's working in the relationship now may not work in 5 years. It may shift. It may completely change. And so, you know, without kids, before kids, I had no problem sitting and folding the laundry as we watch TV at night and this and that. I got resentful of folding laundry. Now that's something in which I in my relationship had to let go of so much control of, like, I had to recognize, do I really care that there are dishes in the sink for 3 days? Is that life or death? Is that going to hurt anybody? Would I want all the dishes completely out of the sink every single night? Yeah,
yes.
Of course. And guess what? We are in a season of busy. We are in the season of, I'd rather, if it is nice out, go out
yeah.
for a bike ride with the family, and I'll let the dishes sit there for 3 days. But we as ourselves, we were trying to constantly soothe our own nervous systems. And so we do what's comfortable for us, but we don't actually look at how it's impacting the other people in the relationship.
Right.
So there's the seasons of life and recognizing that what works for us right now may not work for us in 5 years. And there's the elements of also being able to check in with the things that work and the things that don't work for us.
Yeah. Yeah. Does the grass really need to be cut on every Thursday? Can it go to Saturday? It looks a little shaggy, but you know what? We got to go out and have date night.
Yeah.
And the grass is shaggy. And you know what, in the end?
Yeah, those adjustments.
Who the hell cares? Like, my neighbors don't care. They're never
right.
going to notice.
No.
And if they do, pound sand, right?
Yeah.
We just started talking about weekly check-ins because I noticed that, like, we talk about the calendar and strategy
mm-hmm.
all the time. And we don't, like, hang out. I'm like,
yeah.
when was the last time we hung out
yeah.
and laughed and joked and caught up? And she's like, I don't know. And I'm like, I know. It always is, like, rushed into a date night.
Yeah.
And I feel like I have to vomit everything that was on my brain for the last 3 months in the 45 minutes before we eat dinner, right? And that's,
yeah.
like, awful.
Yeah.
So it hasn't gotten, and I'm using this as an example because I want people to hear it, but, like, we just said, like, hey, let's do Sunday strategy. Like, what is going on for the week? Are you home? What are we doing for dinner? So we can meal plan and just, like, life plan a little bit, right?
Mm-hmm.
What expectations for the week. And then we haven't picked a day yet, but we got to. But we talked about, like, hey, what day do we then download and just vibe, just
yeah.
hang out? And it was like, I've expressed how important that is, but it hasn't happened. And this is not a blame comment. It's more of, I think when it's something new, it's so resistant, right?
Yeah.
Like, trying to make that new rhythm. And it's like, I know there's done's better than perfect. I say that all the time. And life, I say it at work,
mm-hmm.
I say it everywhere, but, like, it's like, man, why isn't it not a focus? And then it could be a male to a female, or in this example it's me saying it to my wife. Like, where do you see in your practice where there's these resistances to something that's a desire, right? Like, somebody's
right.
saying, hey, I think this,
I need date night, why are you fighting me about that?
Yeah, like, why is this I don't have time for
of
this?
All the things,
right?
Well, and I find interesting is one of my favorite things to say in my office is that people always experience or think that trauma is what happens to us. And typically what I see is that trauma is all the things that didn't happen for us that we needed to happen for us.
Mm.
All the times in which we needed somebody to show up during a time in which maybe there was an event in which they didn't show up. So thinking back to the earlier time where you got emotional and you were like, I just need them to show up for me. That is where most trauma lives, is I need people to show up for me. I need people to be there. I need my needs to be met. So once again, this is another situation I find it interesting you bring up. Now you're theming, right, today, is that in your life, you're not feeling as though your needs are being met, is that people are showing up for you. And so you've communicated this to your wife, but now it's not being received.
Yeah.
And it's like, you can't make it happen. So then how do you make this work? How do you ask her of, okay, I've communicated what my needs are. I need to have connection with you. What does this look like? And maybe it's being more intentional of like, and I find it hard is sometimes people will become really good at getting a schedule or putting something on the calendar and sticking with it. For other people, that's not going to work. My husband and I, like, we've tried that. That doesn't work for us. But it's being very, very intentional of, even if it's when I'm doing the dishes at night, or even if it's when I'm in the shower and I'm like, hey, come in here and talk to me while I'm in the shower. Like, the kids are off doing their thing, or hey, like, it can be, hey, I'm going pee. Follow me into the bathroom. Let's talk for 5 minutes.
I thought we were going a different way, but yeah.
Right? Like, that's necessary too, right? There needs to be time where you can disengage. And even if it is those breakaway periods to say like, hey, I have needs, like, show up. Let's talk. Let's meet.
It's interesting you say that, because it does derive from that trauma. My mom left when I was 4. Mm-hmm. And yes, we would get visitations, but she was... or we found out later, bipolar. Mm-hmm. She's an awful mom. She's terrible. I still, like, desire that need.
Yeah.
So
for her to show up.
For her to show up, and, like, she's never going to be in my life. But, like, that is, it unfortunately falls to or on my wife as an expectation, because it's like, hey, you're my one person. I get to have that. So, like, if I'm desiring that, right? And this is, I'm not having a confessional, but more of like, hey, I get what you're saying. There's definitely a theme of noticing that part. Like, dang, I know it's there. And why is it so dramatically, like, intense?
And you've given her that information? She knows you just said. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
But so this is where, like, parts work, is that this is a 4-year-old part of you. So the present day part of you that is however old you are, 46-year-old part of you that your wife can see, she's like, I don't understand why this is such
You're
a
an adult
deal.
Man.
You're an adult man.
You know how many times I've heard that?
You're fine. Like, you know, whereas the 4-year-old part of you is like, hold me, love me, show up for me, I need you. And so that's where I would go in the trauma work, is like, we have to heal that wound from the 4-year-old part of you, because it's still looking for all the evidence in which somebody is going to fail me. Mm-hmm. Somebody is not going to show up for me. And I'm going to be left with this hole, and I'm going to have to.
But can you still need that? Like, let's
Absolutely.
Say you can heal that 4-year-old of the hug and the touch.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I can see. This is why she's here.
Yeah, no, this is great.
That's why, like, she's here.
I'm being very open about this, because, like, it's true. Yeah. It's literally, like, it's the most obtrusive thoughts I know aren't real, but they are there.
What did you just... You did
time.
The same thing you did earlier. Is it's not real. You're dismissing that 4-year-old part, which is only injuring you more.
And it is real.
It is real.
It's absolutely real.
That is a part
of
your existence.
And it's totally okay.
And I have these Russian, not Russian roulette, the little Russian dolls in my office.
Oh, yeah,
that go
inside of each other. Yeah, the stats.
Where I'm like, this is us. Like, Petrushka?
Is that what it's called?
Yeah, Petrushka doll.
I'm going to feel like
that. Yeah, they're layered together.
Yeah,
it's
the
multiple layers of a human. That's how that started.
Yeah, and so I will take them all apart, and I will show a person, this is who you are. There are parts of you. There is a young, little, tiny part of you. Then as we evolve, we grow different parts of you. And so just like we talked about, you're like, Jennifer or Jen? And I'm like, I go by Jen. But then I joked, and I'm like, I was Jenny growing up. Then I became, you know, G.I. Jen or Sluga.
G.I. Jen is amazing, by the way. I love G.I. Jen. I'm going to make you a t-shirt.
G.I. Jen. No, some of my clients made me a t-shirt once, and it was WWJS, because they're like, anytime I get into a situation, or they're like, I can almost start hearing you in my head.
That's amazing
that I'm
that
like,
you have that effect.
What would Jen say during this? What would Jen do? Like, and I think that's you know, one of the most amazing parts of being in a role and being a therapist is knowing that, like, even when I'm not there, they're reflecting on the words and the things that you're teaching them and being able to help them through.
Yeah, and I don't have, and coming from a fully together, fully present, my mom loved me and all these things, I still need that. I need a woman to just like grab, like, I have that physical touch, that skin time and stuff.
Yeah.
That's huge to me. I don't need anybody to say, Scott, you're great, or buy me anything.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that touch of knowing that at any time when I'm just not, I need it.
Right.
And if you ask for it and people are like, you're an adult man, like, I got to hug my kids. It's like, wait, what? Why wouldn't you want to do that?
Right.
And I mean, so you're asking.
I overly hug my children because I don't want them to ever feel that. Right.
Yeah.
Like,
right.
And not in a way that they ever feel uncomfortable, but like every time I'm home, anytime I'm near them, I drop them. Like, we made a plan this year because I'm actually, like, missed seeing them. So, like, this year I drop them off to school every morning. And I hug them and kiss them and tell them an affirmation every morning before they leave.
Yeah.
Because I feel like they need that from a dad, right? But I didn't get that, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, that part I desire. But, like, as Scott was talking about, like, that touch, it can be literally, and this is just, it flashed in my brain for some mm-hmm. reason. Probably because it was most recent. My wife walked by the other day, and I have this chair. I like waited forever to buy this chair because I wanted like my chair. Uh-huh. So I bought this really awesome. This thing makes you literally feel like you're floating.
Uh-huh.
It's awesome. Anyways, so I was sitting
I'm laughing
chair.
Only because my husband begged for a chair, and I had fashionable chairs in our living room for years. And he's like, I hate these chairs. Yeah. I need a man. Chair that is my chair.
Hold you. It like feels like a man.
So
chair.
We have a chair.
Yes.
So we got a man.
I don't have
very
one, but
chair.
I can understand.
It's very. It's unbelievable.
I want it to
I'm
look
sorry,
good.
Sorry,
I want it to look good.
No,
I want it to look good. I'm like you. I need it needs to match. So we're good.
I don't give a shit. So anyways, I was there, and all she did was walk by, and give me a light squeeze like around my shoulder, and I felt everything fall off.
Yep.
It was just like.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, you have goosebumps. And I was like,
you just
like,
need it.
Yeah,
yeah,
like,
I
just need that. And she was like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, and what's interesting is being a boy mom, there are so many things, and maybe this is why also, like, I'm willing to talk about, is I think that before having kids, I was like, oh, you know, men and women, we're all the same. Like, you know, like, I wanted to be part of this very, like, fluid, diverse, and, you know, like, I think that we were raised, like, I'm like, I grew up tomboy, I was in the military, like, and I will say there was a time in which, because of the amount of sexual trauma I had, is that I went through a phase in which I loved being a tomboy, I loved wearing men's clothing, because it hid my feminine vibe, I didn't want to be sexy, I didn't want to be cute, because that meant scary, it meant that I might be in danger, so there's times in which I think we can be fluid, but I think this current generation is we form these, like, we have created too many names to call things and too many, like,
labels.
This is what it is.
Labels.
Stupid labels.
But then we get stuck in that label, and you can't be fluid with it. You can't change it. And so when having boys, I really realized how much that, like, with boys, there is what's called proprioceptive learning. And boys need their bodies touched. They ground themselves better when their body is touched up against other surfaces. So boys have a hard time in the classroom because they can't just ground themselves like a
in
girl.
In the chair and just...
Yeah,
like,
they're
they
dancing
hit the
a chair.
Wall
they're, and... like, they're jumping, they're dancing,
yeah,
they're climbing all over everything.
Yeah.
Because they are actively trying to ground themselves in the classroom. They are actively trying to feel their body in their environment. And whereas with females, like, right, we can go, oh, five things I see, five things I can smell, all the things.
You're in space.
Men need physical touch. They need to jump off a chair onto a landing. They need to slam their body into another body to feel good. Right. And, you know, in couples advice, and you guys will probably find this entertaining, is I always say, I'm like, do not have a conversation with your significant other, with your husband, unless you have sex first. Because.
Interesting.
If you try
noted,
write this down, right? Is that
fact
if,
of the day.
It can be a new t-shirt. Have sex.
Don't talk to
have
me.
Sex first.
What would Jen say?
And then dot dot. Yeah, what would Jen say? Have sex
but
first,
right,
dot dot
if,
dot.
If you
GI Jen says
have sex first.
If you think about this of like if I'm trying to communicate something really big and really important to me to my husband, if he is not grounded, if his needs are not taken care of, he can't pay attention, he can't attune to mine, and his brain is racing, his brain is doing all those things. If our two bodies come together, have that physical groundedness, that physical touch, and you guys will probably admit this, if we are intimate, he is going to be 120% more agreeable to anything I
say. You can
say
ask
after.
For anything, and
I
we will agree.
I can ask for anything.
Yes, correct.
And so, but those
much
are...
Much more pliable.
Much more pliable because your needs have been met, mm-hmm. and you can actually comprehend what it is I'm saying, what it is I'm asking for, what it is I'm trying to communicate.
We're open.
Well,
we're
like,
open.
Well,
it opens,
it's
it opens
like
a door.
It
yes.
to the two of us.
Is it the oxy... Is it the dopamine or oxy...
No, it's the touch.
It's
yeah,
the
but
touch.
There's some,
you are... Well, and right, yes, you get the serotonin, you get the oxytocin, the bonding chemicals. You are then able to actually connect to one another and listen and take care of each other's needs. And so, you know, I've had to learn how to interact with my little boys who need physical touch, who need me to wrestle with them on the floor and be rough and throw them around and then teach them a lesson and then talk to them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we try to act as though we're all the same. We're not all the same. We all need different things. And I would say even sitting in front of the two of you today is that both, you know, what therapy should be all about is not figuring out like, you know, one side of the spectrum or another, but figuring out like, what authentically do you need in your soul? Why do you need it? How is something in your life currently serving you? Is it serving you? Or is it just allowing you to stay stuck and keep doing the same thing that you've been doing? Is it survival? Is it because it's familiar? Or is it because it's actually helping you?
Well, and why is it so hard?
Right.
Why is it so hard for people to get to that? Like, if you could just put a cap on it and say, you know, I think you can probably see Charlie and I have done a lot of work on stuff, and we can talk pretty vulnerable where we're at, what we need. But there's a lot of people, including women, that just cannot even have that conversation. What is that block? And in your opinion, like, if someone's listening to this and they're like, ah, Scott and Charlie are goofy, but I kind of like what Jen's saying, and I can understand it. I can understand it. And like, where do I start? Like, obviously you can schedule an appointment with a therapist, but if they had to do some work before they got there, like, what does that look like to open the door?
I always ask the question, how is this serving you? Whatever you're working on, how is this serving you? Is it working for you? Is it actually helping you? And so many people will go, you know, even drinking, right? Like if somebody comes in and they're like, I'm drinking too much. Well, how is it serving you? It's not. I hate the fact that I'm drinking and it's causing all this conflict in my relationship. No, no. It's serving you in some way. And then they can be more vulnerable and open with, oh yeah, it's helping me feel numb. It's helping me feel detached. It's helping me not have to deal with the things. It's my avoidance tactic. Okay. Is it working for you then? Are you willing to change this? Are you willing to try something different? Because in trying something different, it's going to be uncomfortable. Yeah. You know, we all want what is familiar because we know we can survive it. Our nervous system loves familiar. It loves knowing that we are going to be okay. That is what all of us are looking for in this world, is that, am I going to be okay? Am I safe? And like, that's the root of like comfort. And, you know, I think that's the reason why so many people go into therapy, is they're craving someone in their life to just validate them, to hear them, to listen to them and go, you're going to be okay. You got this.
It's that simple.
It's that simple.
I like the wrestling up. I know we got to wrap up here, but my kids, every day when I come home, I have to wrestle. Have to. I get to.
Yeah.
I shouldn't say have to. They want it, and I love it.
Yes.
I mean, but I'm also 255 pounds. He's 90, and she's 60 pounds. So, of course, it's a modified wrestle.
All in the 90 percentile for their ages, by the way.
Yeah.
They're both ginormous kids.
But they're
tall.
They love it.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm surprised my daughter loves it as much as she does. But, like, it is the way that they want to get it all out, to be connected. And if I cut it short, is like I told them, I hate them, right? And so I'll do it as long as we can. And I usually notice that, like, dinner's ready. Like, we better, like...
Yeah.
So I have to get... And unfortunately, I'm not always good at this, but I have to be the... This is why my wife is trained as a teacher. She's like, hey, you have to say, like, 1 minute. And then cut it off. You can't be like, I'm done! And then walk out. And the kids are like, what? You know, they start melting down. And so, anyways, but I've noticed that that's a really great bond when I get home.
Well, and the science behind that is as a mom, I struggle with, and I will admit, I'm a workaholic. I tend to work more than my husband does. I am kind of like, sometimes I wear the pants a little bit more than I should, and I have to be very careful with that. But I've struggled with the fact that, like, I don't play with my kids as much as I should. And because I struggle with putting that as a priority, and it's something that I'm very mindful of. And somebody once said to me of like, Jen, if you ever say, like, if your kids come up and go, hey mom, can we do this? And you're like, oh, I got to do the dishes first. I have just told my kids that dishes are more of a priority than them. And I have learned, I never want my kids to think that anything else besides my husband is more of a priority than them. But what science shows is that kids actually get more dopamine, more serotonin, more feel good chemicals from playing with dad than they do women, than with the mom. And so their brain responds more to physical touch, compassion, love, than nurturing from mom. And actually, they don't respond as much to that coming from dad. But then they respond to, if mom plays with them, they're not going to get those same chemicals than the play they get from dad. And so there is an importance, and I think we've lost that in this society that we have right now, is there is an importance of two people and being able to realize that they need to have the playful side. They need to be able to have that outlet, but they also need an outlet for love and attention and care and nurturing.
They do need both.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. My favorite special questions at the end here.
Oh, fun.
They're not that hard. But they're off topic. But we end every show this way. All right, question one. Everything you either have done or accomplished in your life, to this point, what is the one thing you hope to leave after you die?
I feel like this is the tombstone question, as I sometimes put this out to clients of like, what do you want people to write on your tombstone when you die? Like, what's your legacy? I go into every single interaction as me. I try to show up as authentically and real as I possibly can be. And that is my goal for every human I work with, is not to try to make them in the image in which I feel what would be helpful for them, but instead of like, what is their most authentic version of themselves, and helping people explore that. And so by modeling that, I want to show everybody, like, you're not going to fit into a perfect little box. You're not going to, not everybody's going to like you. Not everybody's going to respect the choices you make, but if they're authentic and feel good to you, like, you only get one life. Make it count, make it worth it, make it look like you want it to look.
Mm. Love it. Follow through this transition as well. What was the single most important thing that helped you create success in your life in any way? So like think of a habit or a ritual or whatever it may be.
I'm very cautious when I say this, is I think energetically, I shy away from this one now, but I can look at every ounce of struggle I've had has led to an element of recognizing how much I can overcome, how strong I am, how powerful I've became. Like, it's only taught me what my capacity truly is. And so I don't shy away from failure. I push myself, and if something doesn't work out, it's like, okay, that wasn't meant to work out, or that wasn't meant to happen. But I think too many people get in their own way, or they don't try, or they don't push themselves to their limits because they're afraid of failure. And so I take every ounce of like every failure, everything that's hard, everything that hurts. It's like, that was a lesson. What can I learn from it? How can I grow from it? And what do I do now with that information?
Mm.
That's hard.
It is hard. I mean, as much as you want to do that, it's very complex.
That's an amazing place to be.
What special talent that you have that no one knows about?
Oh, dear Lord.
That you can tell us.
That you can actually say on the radio, I should say.
Appropriateness. What's talent? That's a really interesting question. I think honestly this is something that as a therapist, I work with other therapists on like honing this skill, but I think there's this sense of knowing of like, I just know things. And to be honest, I don't think it's a special skill, but I think that when I bring it back to mental health, is I think there's an element of the more you actually figure out who you are, the more you figure out like there is an energy we are plugged into. And so what I always used to associate is like, wow, I must be really psychic, or I must just be really empathic or understanding, or I can sit across from a person and instantly know so much about their life without them even telling me. Is there's a sense of just, I think that's, it's actually being further connected to a much bigger energy field.
Yeah.
And
frequency. It's a frequency, right?
It's a frequency.
I think it's a frequency that we operate on, and we find each other.
And some people understand it as like, okay, they're comfortable. And also being able to respond to people's level. Like, some people can't say the word God because of their relationship or lack of relationship with God.
Yeah, and so,
yes, and even energy, creator, whatever it is. And my ability to, a word came to me once, and I think I'm a human translator. It's like, I can take anything that a person energetically gives to me and be able to translate back to them everything that I know and all the knowledge I have and the resources I have in a way in which they can actually comprehend and get it back. Is because I think there's so many tools and skills and people out there, but they're not able to tell us information in a way that we can receive it.
Translator.
Yes. Yeah. I'm a translator.
Yeah.
And yet I cannot speak foreign language to save my soul. I had to get an alternative thing in college so that I could do like American Sign Language because I can't speak any foreign language.
That
is my unsuper skill.
Yeah, that's okay. Last question. What is your kryptonite?
Ooh. I want to say letting people in was my gut instinct. That's been the hardest for me, is being vulnerable, being open myself, doing the work, taking my hands off my hips and saying, I don't want to do it by myself anymore. I'm realizing how much I crave help, crave connection, crave collaboration, how much, you know, like when you plug into that energy field, like we need each other, and how much we're able to accomplish with each other. So it's being able to comfort that little girl and go, it's okay. They're not going to hurt you. You're safe.
That's amazing.
Love it.
So where can someone find you if they want to work with you more, get more information?
Yeah. So I have, my practice is located in Wanakee. It's Trauma Life Consulting. I also, as much as I hate social media, I will be totally honest. I feel like, unfortunately, you have to play the game right now. And so I do have Instagram and Facebook for Trauma Life Consulting. And I try to post a couple times a week and just post random thoughts. If I see themes, because I think we are all energetically connected, where if I see the same message showing up 7 times in a week, I'm like, okay, I got to record this. Like, this is something that is so applicable that more people can benefit from what I'm responding to.
Cool. Well, thanks for coming in today.
Thank you, guys. Yeah, this is fun.
We appreciate it.
Yeah, so, maybe more. It feels like we got
I feel like we're starting to stack some here that we can bring on multiple times, and I got notes. So.
All right, great. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Assist Podcast today. We hope you enjoyed our guest and our subject. Our goal is to reach and help as many people as we can. We ask that if this information is helpful to you, please give an assist to someone by sharing it out. Stay curious, stay open, and come back to see us for our next episode.